very first book, the book of Genesis. Because in the book of Genesis we have the origins of the world and human life explained in God's terms. We're presented with a picture of God the Creator, and somehow this first part of the book of Genesis seems to be almost a lost world. So let's have a look at this very intriguing book, and the simple statement at the start of the book is, in the beginning God created the heaven and the earth. A very simple statement of fact which gives to us faith and confidence in God, that we are to believe in Him. So when we look at the first part of the book of Genesis and open the curtains on that book, the book of early Genesis and the history of the world, we find that there's not much information given to us. And in fact, a lot of years pass in the first six chapters. It could be many thousands of years pass in the time before the flood that's recorded for us in chapter 6. And so part of that world has, at that time in this world, has really nothing much to tell us in the book of Genesis. And essentially it becomes sort of lost world. What were these people like? And how did they live? You see, the conventional idea that we descended from the apes and we've come about by chance is certainly not taught in the Bible. And as creationists, we believe that God created everything, and that the theory of evolution is still a theory and not been proven. And the theory of evolution would inform us that we came from the apes, and so the people in early history would be very, very low intelligence. Yet when we look in the Bible, that's not the picture we're presented with. The conventional picture is that this is what happened, but the Bible tells us people were like this, and this has nothing to do with it whatsoever. And especially when we look in the first part of the book of Genesis, it's revealed to us that God created everything. So in this early part of Genesis, in that passage we've just read, here's a description of life in the early days of the history of the world. And what do we know about it? Well, here's the first point that we read in verse 17, that Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bare Enoch. And when he built a city, he called the name of the city after the name of his son Enoch. Now Cain is the second generation in the history of the world, and he's building a city. Now isn't that amazing? This was certainly no ignorant person. He had the intelligence to build a city. And I suppose that we think of cities much like Leeds or Bradford or somewhere like that. But really the cities of Cain's day would be more like this. A collection of houses, probably what today we would call no more than a village. But nevertheless, it tells us that these people, in the first part of the Bible, in the early history of the world, were able to do amazing things, and building cities was one of them. And as you continue reading, you find that life perhaps wasn't all that much different to that of today, because you find that there's people living in tents and having livestock, there's people who play the lyre and pipe, and there's forging going on and making instruments of bronze and iron. So there we have, in the earliest records of civilization, you have people able to do these things. And you can imagine the world of that day. The people would play their music, and they would be workers in bronze and iron. They would be musicians, and you can almost imagine the bands playing to entertain the people of that day. So it's a world full of civilization and culture. And that's the world presented to us by the Bible. But the question is, of course, does archaeology confirm that? And archaeology is digging up the past. And sometimes it's amazing to see exactly what is found. And some things that are found don't fit the conventional picture that the evolutionist presents to us, but give us a completely different picture. Things don't fit the conventional ideas. So I want to show you one or two of these examples of things that have been discovered which really support the case of the Bible. So let's ask the question, what's this? It's what appears to be a huge footprint in rock itself. And when you think the rock was supposedly formed many, many millions of years ago, you ask the question, how can somebody's footprint appear in it long before they were supposed to have come on the scene? And this isn't just the only place in the world where these footprints occur. Here's another giant footprint in stone, and a man here has got his foot in the actual impression of the foot in the stone. And as you can see, his foot is a good 5 or 6 inches shorter than that in the stone. And this was discovered in 2002. And the rock is supposed to be a billion years old. Now, does that mean human beings were around 1,000 million years ago? Doesn't make sense, does it? And it's not the only one. There are other ones too in other places in the world. You've even got human handprints, which are found in rock, which is supposedly formed long, long before they were born. Here is a genuine handprint, say the archaeologists and geologists, and it's there in rock. So how did this come about? And as I say, these are unusual things which the conventional evolutionists would dismiss because they don't appear to support his theory. And yet there's no denying that these things are there. And it's interesting that these giant footprints, again, would support the case of the big people in the early parts of the Bible, because they're called a fancy name by Nephilim in chapter 6 and verse 4 of Genesis, but it really means giants. There were big people around, and perhaps these are some of the footprints which have been left from long ago by these giant people. In fact, the whole of archaeology is riddled with these uparts. Now, uparts stands for out of place artifacts. Take the first letters of each word there, out of place artifacts, because they don't fit any conventional picture that the evolutionist throws to us. But the question we ask is, you can't deny that these things exist, so are they really out of place? Or are they given as a more accurate version of time in the past? This is the sort of thing that we're presented with in our school books of today, the so-called geologic column, which shows us the history of the past and is supposed to show how the old life in the world came about. But there are various things that have been discovered, these uparts, which really go against what is told us in that geologic column. For example, coal was formed many, many, many millions of years, supposedly, before man was on the earth. And yet here's a cast iron pot made by a human being found inside coal deposits. So it seems to imply that, you know, human beings were around the same time coal was being formed. And this isn't the only thing that you find. Here's a cast iron, bell, an intricately worked bell, which is being found inside a lump of coal. And there's a list of things. It's not, these aren't the only two. You could go on and find lists of things like a gold chain, an iron thimble, an iron pot, a drill bit, no less, coins, a steel cuboid-shaped tool, a carved stone bearing the image of a man's face, and the list goes on and on. Man-made items which have been found in lumps of coal. Yet coal is supposed to have been formed long before man was on the earth. Doesn't make sense, does it? How could it possibly be, according to the conventional picture? You see, according to the textbooks, things like coal were formed in this geological column way down here, whereas human beings came on the scene way up here. But this seems to contradict that. That's why they're called out-of-place artifacts, things that have been discovered long ago. In fact, the comment perhaps is from this expert in geology that no single area in the world contains all record of all geological time. he says we only need to discover bits and pieces, in effect, from here and there, these bits of fragments, to try and build up a complete record by putting them together. And this really is circular reasoning. The idea is formed that this is what happened in the past, that these things must have been in that order. So when bits and pieces are found in various parts of the world, they're put in that order, and then they say that's proof that it has happened that way. But it's not the case. Far, far simpler to believe is the record that in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. And that is the simple statement which begins the Bible, which gives us great confidence in the purpose of God, rather than blind chance. So let's concentrate on these early humans in the book of Genesis. Let's ask the question, all right, what do you think this is? And you probably can't tell from the photograph, but it is a lump of rock, piece of stone. In the middle of it is what appears to be something made of a ceramic substance with an iron rod down the middle. An X-ray was taken of this, and the X-ray, that's the top left picture there, is it cut into two, and you can see both halves of it, and it's encased in rock. The X-ray picture says that inside is something metal which has this kind of shape. And this was what's known as the Koso artifact. And what this really seems to be, something discovered in California in 1961, bears a very striking resemblance to what we would use today in our motor cars, a spark plug. There it is, encased in stone. And the stone is 500,000 years old. Now, it doesn't make any sense, does it? Did these people of early Genesis really have the ability that they might have harnessed electricity or static electricity? We just don't know, but it gives you some idea that things are not always, might not always have been exactly as we're led to believe by the BBC. What's been left behind is a record of the past, a record of the past left by human beings. They've left behind paintings, they've left behind carvings, they've left behind things that they've made, and these all tell us what happened in the past. So if we went to Egypt, for example, and come across something like this, what do you think it is? I'm looking at this particular item in this relief on this wall. It's what appears to be a filament of some kind inside a glass or visible container. And it bears striking resemblances to a light bulb. Now, isn't that amazing? How could this possibly be? But even more importantly, which throws a whole new light on history, is to ask the question, what do you think this is? This is a burial stone, and it comes from Peru. And in fact, 50,000 or so of these have been found. And I think they're about probably that big, but they have carvings on them. And here's one particular carving of a sort of creature. Now, I don't know what that is. It doesn't seem to fit anything in today's description of animal life. But there are lots of these. That's just one example. If we look at some of them, they have pictures like this. And that creature at the bottom there is unmistakably a dinosaur, and in particular, a triceratops. But more importantly, look what's on its back. There's a man riding a triceratops. If I put the two side by side, here's a modern reconstruction of a triceratops. You see the similarity. But we're talking about stones here, which are thousands and thousands of years old. And we ask the question, okay, well, how did people of that age in the history of the world at that time, how did they manage to draw such accurate representations of dinosaurs? After all, if dinosaurs weren't around, how could they reconstruct such in such detail, even if they found the odd bone or two? it doesn't make any sense. And it's a very valid question that how did these people draw these representations? And there are lots of them. Here's another one, for example. And what you have here is a dinosaur, unmistakably on the left of a Tyrannosaurus rex. Is what we would know as a Tyrannosaurus rex, or T-Rex nowadays. But notice what's happening on the right-hand side. There's a human being fighting this T-Rex, and he seems to be being attacked by another T-Rex from behind him. So what's happening here? You've got engravings, carvings in these stones of unmistakable dinosaurs. And yet, the picture you've got here is of men hunting dinosaurs. Now, the dinosaurs were supposed to have died out 65 million years before man came on the scene. But how can these carvings, how can they have been produced? How could human beings living only a few thousand years ago, who had no knowledge, supposedly, of dinosaurs, perhaps only discovered an odd bone here or there, make such detailed, accurate representations of these creatures? And this is worthwhile asking, because this isn't the only place in the world where the human representations of dinosaurs occur. Do you know that the word dinosaur is a new word? It didn't exist until 1841. It came into existence after words like locomotive, rocket and computer, which were earlier on in the 19th century. Obviously the computers of those days were not what we imagine today, more like an abacus, but the word was put there in the dictionary. Now, that's when the word dinosaur was invented. It came from Greek meaning terrible lizard, dinosaur. But it was put together, and the word was coined by a man called Richard Owen. So the dinosaur word appeared in a dictionary in the middle of the 19th century. So before then, just suppose dinosaurs were around, how would you describe them if you hadn't got the word dinosaur? Supposing you were living a few thousand years ago and you came across the Tyrannosaurus rex, what would you call it? And I think the answer is, you'd call it a dragon. And when you look at the records of history, the records of history are full of dragons. All over the world, every culture seems to have this description of people and dragons encountering each other. And you can imagine how a dinosaur could easily be mistaken for a dragon. In fact, you know, you've got cities named after dragons, you've got people who slew dragons, they're canonized by the Catholic Church and so on. And the simple equation is this, that the dragons of old are really the dinosaurs of history. When cultures throughout different parts of the world all come up with the same visual picture of dragons, how can they have come across that just by using imagination, especially when they come from different places in the world? You've got to really put together the clue that they saw these creatures. And these creatures in those days, they referred to them as dragons. So, I've talked to you about the Peruvian burial stones. What about this one here? It's again from Egypt, but this is a mosaic, a picture that's been made out of tiny little pieces of pottery and so forth. And it shows people hunting a particular creature. But the creature they're hunting, what does it look like to you? It looks to me like a dinosaur. Or in those days, they would call it a dragon. What about the famous gate in Babylon that Nebuchadnezzar built and put this image on? What's that? What sort of creature is that? Could that also be a sort of dinosaur? You can go over the other side of the world and you get the same picture. Here in Cambodia, there's a temple. And in the temple, there are carvings. And this particular carving here, what do you think it is? Let's focus in on it. It can be nothing else but a stegosaurus, a type of dinosaur. But again, we ask the question, how could people have made carvings of these creatures, or drawings of these creatures, or paintings of these creatures, if they'd never saw them, if never seen them, if they were just a figment of their imagination. It makes no sense whatsoever. So perhaps the rethinking of history is required. The one that you've probably come across a lot is this one of dinosaur footprints alongside human footprints, and they're made in the stone. Creatures have walked across them in the age when stone was being formed. And that man there in the picture is just walking in the tracks. He hasn't made them. They're actually there in the stone. But they're unmistakably human footprints, and they're crossed by dinosaurs' footprints, indicating both were alive at the same time. And there are other places in the world where you have the same sort of teaching standing out from archaeology. That here in the United States, 10 human skeletons were found in the same layer as dinosaurs. If we were to go over to Mexico, and we're going back to about 4,500 BC, the people living in Mexico in those days made representations, I believe, of what they saw. And lots of these figurines have actually been discovered. There are 33,000 or so of these figurines. They're all carefully crafted, and about a tenth of them are obviously dinosaurs. I say obviously because when you look at them, there you have a sample of them. They can't be mistaken as anything else. They are dinosaurs. So again, we ask the question, how did these people living in Mexico 6,500 years or so ago managed to make accurate representations of creatures which didn't exist, which were later discovered thousands of years later? It makes no sense. The only main thing that makes sense is if, as crazy as it may seem, dinosaurs and human beings were alive at the same time, at one point in the record of the history of the world. Here's another one. There's stacks of evidence. The Temple of the Feathered Serpent, dating from the 1st century AD. What's this creature on the wall? Again, a dinosaur would fit the description. Even in 1700 or so, this is what the Natural History of Switzerland depicted. It's a man from Switzerland, and he's encountering a strange creature. He's encountering what would be, in his terms, a dragon, but we would know better as a dinosaur. And it's easy to see the similarity. Here, for example, is a particular dragon. Whoops, let's go back on that one. That creature, you could spend a couple of minutes looking at it and think, well, what is this? Is it a dinosaur or is it a dragon? If you were to encounter that today, and I suppose, you know, you'd have a couple of seconds looking at it and then 10 minutes of running away. But, they're quite fearsome creatures. But what we've seen is really eyewitness evidence that dinosaurs, referred to as dragons in history, lived at the same time as people. Now, the conventional dragon in history is a fire-breathing monster. A fire-breathing dinosaur, I believe, has been discovered, but the fire element of it is probably the snorting and the smoke, and you know, we say people breathe fire if they're shouting at us as a hyperbole, don't we? But what we've seen is evidence, eyewitness evidence, that dinosaurs and people lived at the same time. Remember, the word dinosaur couldn't be used in history because it was a new word invented in the 1800s. So any mention of dinosaurs is probably that of dragons. And that mention of dragons is evidence people saw dinosaurs. And the same is true in the scriptures. That the dragon in Hebrew, and the word dragon does occur in the Bible, was actually the dinosaur that they saw. Let's quote one or two examples from the Bible. Here's one in Isaiah 27, that God will slay the dragon that's in the sea. The word dragon really means monster. It's a big creature. And a dinosaur perhaps would fill that sort of description. When we look in the book of Job, you've got the way in which God answers Job by telling him about the wonders of creation. He says, can you do this, Job? Can you make these creatures? Can you do that? And he lists incredible creatures that he's made. And in chapter 41 of Job, he mentions a creature called Leviathan. Now, if you've got a Bible and you're looking at your margin, you might think it says a crocodile or something like that. But when you look at the description of what this creature has got, you seem to find that a crocodile isn't quite the right sort of description, would fit in that description. It's something different. And in fact, something like this, a plesiosaur, would be much better fit to the description of this Leviathan in the book of Job. There's also another creature mentioned in the book of Job. This one is called Behemoth. And he's got a tail which is stiff like a cedar. It's obviously something big and muscly. He's got power in the muscles of his belly, his sinews and his thighs are knit together. And he's got a stiff tail. And the margin reference might say this is an elephant, or perhaps even a hippopotamus. But the question we ask is, does this really fit that description? Because an elephant doesn't have a tail like a cedar, nor does a hippopotamus have a tail like a cedar. But a brontosaurus does. So is this what was seen, what was identified at the time the book of Job was being written? So what you've seen is eyewitness evidence that human beings and dinosaurs coexisted. Wherever you look, you have in rock art the carvings, pictures of dinosaurs. You have the artifacts like the stones and the figurines. You have the legends of history referring to dragons. And you have the mention in the Bible of these great creatures. Perhaps they did live at the same time, but why don't we see any around now, you're probably asking. Well, obviously they've died out, at least I hope they have. And you can think that the great flood, which is depicted in the sixth chapter of the first book of the Bible, Genesis, would account for many of the dinosaurs meeting their end, and would fit the description of some great catastrophe which wiped out the dinosaurs, as we're told by the evolutionists. Although perhaps it's a little nearer to our time than it was according to him. But climate change after the flood may have spelt doom for many of those that survived by being in the ark. And there's also another possibility which is not even considered. Remember what's happened to the American bison? Almost extinct because of overhunting by the Indians. What's happened to the dodo? Extinct. And lots of creatures can be added to that list. Creatures which once existed, which humans have spelt doom for and have eliminated from the world. So the possibility is that secular scientists can't even consider is that overhunting has killed the remains of the dinosaurs. What we would see would be that if dinosaurs existed in reasonable numbers in the early part of the book of Genesis, the flood would wipe most of them out. Those that survived by being on the ark in small form would meet their ends as time went by through overhunting or climate change. But what this means is that perhaps we need to consider this fascinating world of long ago. It's intriguing to look in the early part of Genesis to realize that God has made all these creatures, he's made you and he's made me, and all life and the world. And that world of that's described for us before the flood in the book of Genesis is a lost world. A world we know nothing much about, but it does tell us that we can believe in the Bible and believe in God as a creator. Thank you very much.